I'm Marty Moscoe. Welcome to Radio Times. Since early summer, there's been an encampment of people experiencing homelessness, living in tents along the Benjamin Franklin Parkway in Philadelphia. Residents of the camp and activists have been protesting the lack of affordable housing in the city. There's another protest encampment on Ridge Avenue. A judge gave the city permission to clear the camps today after a series of negotiations broke down over the demand for permanent housing. As it stands now, some 47,000 Philadelphia residents are waiting for affordable housing through the Philadelphia Housing Authority, which has accepted no new applicants since 2013. Coming up, we'll hear from a mother and daughter who moved from the encampment to a boarded up PHA house, and from Alex Stewart and Tara, encampment organizers, and from University of Delaware Stephen Metro on policies to address the crisis of homelessness. I should say we asked the mayor's office to send someone to be part of the show today. They were unable to do that. We did not hear back from HHS and Homeless Services. PHA did respond, and they're working to see if they can get someone to join us on the show today. So stay tuned for that. We begin, though, with freelance reporter Jason Peters, who is at the Parkway encampment. And Jason, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hello. Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing lovely.
Well, describe for our listeners, obviously we're on the radio today, describe for our listeners what's happening at the encampment today, what it looks like.
Well, there's about, I'd say, like 15 to 25 police cars out here, a plethora of press, and then an even larger amount of protesters and the homeless residents. They're all kind of layered on top of each other, but the residents of the encampment and activists have set up a metal barricade that they took from the nearby museum, to block off the main vessels into the encampment, like the primary roads. So it's just kind of a standoff around some metal barricades around both the back and front of the encampment.
And how many residents of the encampment, how many protesters are there? Just curious about that.
Well, the residents' numbers fluctuate because being homeless is very transient. They they move from place to place. But usually there's somewhere between 100 and 175 homeless residents. And then today on the protesters, I'd say somewhere between 350 and 550, I'd guess.
Is it a standoff from what you see? It sounds kind of quiet where you are.
Oh, yeah, I walked away, but it ebbs and flows because right now it's quiet because I'm like standing in the middle of the parkway, which is blocked off. But down at the barricade, things have quieted down a bit. There was cheering and chanting. They tried to bring the clergy in twice, once at 10 and 10:30. That had rabble-rousing. But there's a lot of movement right now, so there's not a lot of cheering because they just found out that police are pulling up to Camp Teddy on Ridge. So folks are mobilizing and seeing what they have to do to protect the encampments.
And that's another encampment. It's on Ridge Avenue. It's actually right next to the PHA headquarters, correct?
Yeah, that's called Camp Teddy. It's named after one of the original people to set up a camp. Teddy is like a 60-year-old man. He lived at Camp Teddy until about a week or so ago because he had a heart attack and then was able to move into a hotel with the city because his medical conditions qualified him.
Help us understand, and this encampment on the parkway where you are, this began in early June. Help us understand what happened over the summer, how it grew, what it has been in response to.
Well, I originally came up here the first day that it had coalesced because I had been following what is going on in Portland and other autonomous zones and things like that. But this is completely different than those in a sense that this has become home to hundreds of people because there were enough homeless people in Philly to want to become a part of this. But it started with just five people, a few of them, Alex Stewart, James Talib Dean, whom the camp is named after, Ronald Story and Teddy, to name a few. And then as word got out through both activist circles, homeless circles, because a lot of these people know each other from being on the streets so long or from sharing time in shelters, that just word of mouth passed that there was a place where you could, A, be safe in the summer, have enough like room, because a lot of people were afraid of the shelters because of COVID. And just a lot of people just have no interest in the shelters because of other reasons aside from COVID, that this turned out to be the best option for a lot of people living on the streets.
And at its max, how many tents, how many people living there?
At its max, there was a time before any protest, before any eviction attempts, and before the camps broke up, because there used to be three encampments. One was down by the art museum, one was up by camp, one was Camp Teddy up by the PHA building, and then there's this one on the parkway. Since then, the one has dissolved. Camp Teddy has grown a little smaller, but the JTD camp right here on the parkway has been as large as like 250 people I've seen. Oh. There's a lot of tents stay up and people move in and out. Like I said, it's a very like transient nature to homelessness. You're not going to, some people don't stay here every night. Some people have people that take them other places or family where they can crash for a couple nights. So I'll come to report at the encampment. I'll be like, where is X? And X won't be there because they'll be doing something, because although they are homeless, they do have some like resources, people that love them and stuff that they could do.
This is a part of Philadelphia that has cultural museums, art museums. It's also a part of Philadelphia where there are high rises, more high income housing. What has been the response of residents who have been living there permanently?
I've seen two sides of that coin. Even as so much as today, there a few people showed up and said, get them out of here, and really like expressed displeasure. But then on the opposite side of that coin, people are like, they're just in a park. Everything was canceled this year anyway. I understand what's going on. And even today, there was a woman pushing her granddaughter on the swings on the other side of the police standoff at like 10:20. Oh. She was like, I feel like it's safe. I don't ever feel threatened, XYZ. So like anything, it's extremely polarizing. It became politicized. And if you think one way, you'll think one thing about this. If you think the other way, you'll think the other thing about this.
Now, the city has been negotiating with some of the organizers of the encampment. And it seemed like it boiled down to a demand for permanent housing for people living in this encampment. How did those negotiations go? I mean, it seems as if, especially with this court order, that they were not able to resolve this particular issue.
Well, yeah, you said you're talking to Alex and Tara coming up. They were pretty yep. involved with the negotiating. I from what I've heard, it's been extremely unproductive, because in the opening to this segment, you mentioned that they're not even adding new applicants to the PHA list. So if the PHA is claiming to be as stretched thin as they say they are, and in an op-ed on WHYY, the head of the PHA admitted that the homelessness problem is not exactly his problem. So it's been hard to see who's going to take responsibility for this or try to. It just seems like there's been a lot of miscommunication at the top between bureaucracies that don't really understand the humanity in the situation. Like, there is no blanket fix. These are all tiny individual things. You have people that were addicted to drugs, mental health issues. They've been on the streets for XYZ years. You have people who are blacklisted from the homeless shelters and don't have options, that are just trying to get housing. And it seems like at the bureaucratic level, it just doesn't translate.
And from the city, who has been negotiating on and what have been their arguments about the need to clear this encampment?
You'd hear different things about how it's an eyesore, how it's illegal. Liz Hirsch and the homeless office, they kind of speak in platitudes. They say that this is a sad thing, but there are other solutions. But then the other solutions are things that the people in the encampment don't agree to. So it's literally a game of checkers.
As you mentioned, for a lot of the people who are homeless living here, that this has become a home for them. But I'm curious about things like sanitary conditions. Obviously, there's no running water. There's no sewage there. I mean, how do they deal with those particular issues?
There is a small amount of running water. They have a system of hoses that goes throughout the camp where you can wash your hands. There's a little shower. I'm an essential worker, and every time I come to the camp, they give me a mask for free. My employer doesn't even give me a mask for free. So, everyone's masked up. There's relative plumbing. Like, it's obviously not ideal. But like I said, these are grown adults. Most of them, if they need to take care of something, they'll scrap by. The type of ingenuity that comes with forming a civilization in a park is not going to limit itself when it comes to bathroom needs.
As you mentioned, there are police there, and I'm sure, I don't speak for the city, obviously, but I'm sure the city does not want to have video of people being dragged out of a tent or dragged off the property. What are the options facing the city?
That's it. That is the only option. Like I said, these are people's houses. Speaking personally, if someone tried to drag me out of my house, I would fight. These people have lived here for 3 months. This is probably the most stable living environment that they've had in God knows how long as homeless or unhoused people. So imagine you have nothing to lose and someone tries to rip you away from the only thing that is stopping you from being on the streets. Would you risk it all to protect yourself and defend your community, or would you just allow yourself to be kicked off? I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to understand that. And I think the city knows that, because not only are there encampments, the residents of the encampment who have nothing to lose, there are protesters who are mostly disenfranchised young people who have shields in all black, showing up and being very outspoken that you're not going to touch this camp.
So do you imagine that camp, and I'm asking you to obviously look into the future, Jason, but do you imagine then that camp being there in January in the middle of a snowstorm?
Here's my thoughts on this. I think today probably they won't get evicted. It's just a flexing of the muscles. The city is going, look at all these police, look at these helicopters, look at what we could do. And then the encampment is responding with, look at all these protesters, look at all these blah, 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 look at what we can do. So it's been just a study. I've been at the two previous eviction attempts, and each one it evolves. Each one there's more stuff, more theatrics. Today they tried to bring the clergy. The clergy didn't say anything, really. They walked up, they got booed because they had the homelessness pamphlet that they've all seen a billion times. They have the Office of Homeless Services basic information package. They're walking up to people that know that the homeless shelters exist, have been in the homeless shelters, and saying, hey, what about the homeless shelters? Again. So they just got booed immediately and left. And then now we stand here, and I presume the same thing that happened the last two eviction attempts will happen again. Police will clear out. They will have a party on the blockway or parkway, and then get ready for the next one.
We're almost out of time here, Jason. Do you have a particular interest in the issue of homelessness?
Oh, yeah. I've covered homelessness in my podcast series. I did an episode called Homelessness and Roller Coasters on my podcast, which is called 2100. It's a time capsule to the people of the year 2100. And I talked about the reckless spending of American capital in comparison to spending on the people's needs. And that was back in 2018. I've always had a soft spot for the unhoused, because I don't particularly have $1 billion. And I recognize that in a society with no safety net, anyone could become homeless. So it's important to create that safety net, which doesn't really exist right now.
Well, I appreciate you joining us on Radio Times, getting our conversation started. Jason Peters, thanks so much.
No, thank you very much. I love your program. And
oh, thank you.
Radio.
Okie dokie. I appreciate that. He's a freelance reporter, and he joined us from the Parkway encampment in Philadelphia. Coming up, you'll meet a mother and daughter who were at the encampment, now living in a boarded up PHA house. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. We're talking about the encampment on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway in Philadelphia that the city is scheduled to clear today after a federal judge gave them the okay and after negotiations between the camp organizers and the city broke down. Coming up, we'll hear from Alex Stewart. He's an encampment organizer with the Workers' Revolutionary Collective, and from Tara, a resident of the encampment and an organizer as well. But first, meet Sierra and her daughter Deanny, not their real names, who were residents of the encampment and now living in a house owned and boarded up by the Philadelphia Housing Authority. They were profiled by WHYY's Susan Phillips.
On a narrow one-way street in North Philadelphia, a mother sits on the stoop of a typical red brick row house as her pigtailed little girl plays on the sidewalk.
So when I first came into this house, the look on my face was pretty like a surprise face, like this.
Her eyes and her mouth are wide open.
And then my mom showed me my room, and I was happy, but soon I was kind of tired.
That's 7-year-old Diani and her mother, Sierra. Those aren't their real names. We're protecting their identities because after 4 years of living in shelters and on the streets, Sierra moved into a boarded up and empty house belonging to the Philadelphia Housing Authority.
Mom, what you cooking tonight?
Inside the tidy 2-bedroom house with linoleum floors is a donated couch covered in brightly colored fabrics. Plastic flowers from the dollar store are arranged on a side table. Found portraits of Martin Luther King and Nelson Mandela hang on the wall. A fan blows to cool off in the humid August heat.
Yeah, but at night when I'm hot, I just lift this up and put the fan right here.
Sierra decorated the walls with things she found in the basement, including several women's straw hats.
A lot of the stuff is recycled, and I didn't want it.
Oh, the hats were here.
Yeah.
Oh, nice hat.
I didn't want it to go to waste. It was beautiful. I said, why not?
Sierra is one of about a dozen mothers now squatting PHA housing with their children. It's illegal, and they could be evicted at any time. But like a lot of residents of the encampments, Sierra is frustrated by the amount of time spent waiting for subsidized PHA housing. She's been on the list for 8 years. She tears up talking about it.
Probably this was the wrong way about going away things, but at the end of the day, my daughter is safe and sound, and she's with me, and she's happy. That means everything to me.
7-year-old Diani, who until now has lived with her godmother, becomes quiet listening to her mother talk.
I feel like I wished that I could help her. And basically, like, I wanted to help her. And now that she got her place, I'm happy for her.
The organizers of the homeless encampment who helped Sierra and Diani move into this house say the Philadelphia Housing Authority is boarding up perfectly good row homes to sell them off to developers. This drives gentrification, and there's fewer and fewer places for those in extreme poverty to live. The average median income for this North Philadelphia neighborhood is about $20,000 for a family of four.
You're paying for rodents to live in these houses. They're paying for animals to live in these houses, mice and rats. That's what's living in these properties, not regular people.
But the Philadelphia Housing Authority says the squatted houses are on the list for upgrades and that mothers like Sierra have jumped the queue, a line that includes 47,000 people, and they haven't taken any new applicants since 2013. The agency's CEO, Kelvin Jeremiah, says selling off some of those PHA houses has raised $20 million, which gets funneled back into affordable housing.
So folks are calling upon PHA to make units available, and I'm asking where, with what resources? Just imagine if it cost us $250,000 to $300,000 to build one unit, imagine how much it will cost to build 47,000. PHA does not print money.
PHA has agreed to make 62 homes available to nonprofits. And Jeremiah says he won't kick out people like Sierra for now. Sierra has waited for a PHA home since she gave birth to Diani 7 years ago, when she was still a teenager. Her own mother, also a single mom, died when Sierra was just 17. The loss of her mom left her grief-stricken, frightened, and alone. She lived with a sister, then an aunt. But there wasn't always enough room in the house for a teenage mom and her baby. The mother of a friend, who Sierra calls her godmother, agreed to keep Diani. And Sierra began her journey through the shelter system.
You lose it all out there, to tell you the truth. I lost it all. I became very miserable. I was drained out there, drained.
The 26-year-old started her first job in January, which she lost due to the pandemic.
That was a blessing for me, too, because I never had a job a day in my life.
For the poorest millennials, this is not unusual. Dennis Culhane is a University of Pennsylvania professor whose research focuses on homelessness. He says today's housing crisis actually began in the 1980s as the late baby boomers came of age and there just weren't enough jobs to go around. housing costs rose, and those hurt the most were Black residents. But the Great Recession has added a new cohort to the homeless population, primarily Black people of Sierra's generation.
So there is a definite spike associated with the Great Recession, which once again, it coincided with an increase in population that was coming of adult age, and there was this deep recession, and a lot of folks never got into the labor market.
Colhane says strong research shows if someone doesn't have a steady job by the age of 25, it's unlikely they ever will. He worries the pandemic could cause another spike in homelessness among today's most vulnerable young people. Sierra says some people do need more help than others.
Some people need that first push. You know how you on the swing, you don't know how to swing. Some people need that first push to get them started. Like, because I know I do. Like, I never saw anybody homeless growing up, really. I never saw none of this.
Sierra says after years of shelter living, chasing one program after another that never seemed to get her on her feet, the encampment on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway really gave her the boost she needed.
I actually think it was amazing. I thank God for the people out there in that camp because at the end of the day, they helped me, you know, live life a little bit more easier.
With a key that she can use to lock the door behind her, Sierra says she wants to use the time to get in as many good night sleeps as she can and look for a job. Susan Phillips, WHYY News.
And that was WHYY's Susan Phillips with a profile of Sierra and her daughter Deanna, who were residents of the encampment on the Parkway in Philadelphia, and they are now living in a house owned and boarded up by the Philadelphia Housing Authority. Let me just recap here. For several months now, since the beginning of the summer, people experiencing homelessness in Philadelphia have been living in an encampment of tents along the Benjamin Franklin Parkway, where they have pledged to stay until the city provides permanent housing for all of the residents. After a series of negotiations between the city and the residents could not be reached, and after a federal judge gave the okay, today is the deadline for the residents to leave and for the encampment to be cleared. But as we heard earlier from our guest, seems like a bit of a standoff there. Philadelphia faces a severe shortage of affordable housing and is the biggest poor city in the country. Joining us now is Stephen Metro, and he's director of the Center for Community Research and Service and associate professor at the Biden School of Public Policy and Administration at the University of Delaware, where his work focuses on homelessness. He was one of the authors of a study that looked at the impact of the clearing of an encampment in Kensington a few years ago, known as El Campamento. And Steve Metro, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And let me just make sure our listeners can join our conversation. You can call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We got a description early on in the show of just the kind of a standoff at the Parkway between residents of this encampment, housing activists who are in support of them, and also you've got police and members of the city there as well. From your perspective, Steve, what options does the city face?
Well, I was down there this morning, and standoff is a good description for it. I think what's different about this is that there are activists involved, and what they have done is at least two things that are different from past camps. First of all, they have really kept the message focused on the need for housing and not just shelter and other temporary accommodations, but, you know, making the case that the people who are in camps and hundreds of others throughout the city like them need housing, need permanent housing. And also they have signaled that they are, you know, willing to resist. And typically when an encampment has gotten cleared, and there have been a series of encampments that have been cleared over the course of the year, you know, people who are staying there, they don't want to mix it up with the police, so a lot of them will go. And activists here, they're ready to basically take it to the bitter end. So that's really the way things stand.
I mean, I've seen it described as a protest encampment, and that's different, as you just said.
It's, I mean, the protest element is different. I think what also gives it weight is that there were, I believe, over 150 people who were staying down at the main camp over 22nd and the Parkway. And right. So, you know, it is very much a place that homeless people are going, and that, you know, there is some element of community and there is also element of support. I mean, there's, you know, they are getting fed. They have a place to stay, and in some ways kind of a respite from just the isolation that typically accompanies life on the streets.
In fact, Jason, and frankly, we were supposed to talk to a resident of the shelter, but we heard that in Susan's piece, which for some of these people, this is home. This is a community. And I think for people observing on the outside or have no understanding of homelessness, it doesn't look like a home. It looks like a mess.
And, I mean, there's elements of that. I mean, you need to consider what your house would look like if there was no garbage pickup at all. You know, the sanitation facilities are extremely limited. There's people that are coming and going all the time. And like I said, it's 150 people. So it's, you know, the logistics of managing a situation like that, especially in the middle of a pandemic, are really daunting.
I mean, those are unique but important health issues, correct? I mean, if you're talking about mm-hmm. sanitation, as Jason said, there is a hose that people use, but, you know, nonetheless, that's not the same thing as running water.
Yeah, I mean, there are some rudimentary facilities. I mean, there are porta potties. There is some, you know, there is limited running water. And again, I haven't spent much time there, so I'm going to be careful about what I say here. But so, you know, there are some accommodations for that, but again, the challenges are large. But also, you know, you're looking at shelters which have their own, you know, have their own health issues, especially in the midst of this pandemic, in terms of being able to effectively socially distance in an indoor congregate living facility is also difficult and also leads to conditions where a lot of people would rather stay outside and they would fear for their personal safety in the shelter.
And one of the I've read interviews with a number of people who have been living in some of these encampments, and for them, there are fewer rules. It feels safer. They don't have to, you know, worry about sweeps and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's largely a trade-off. I mean, neither, you know, you have the people staying there have the choice between temporary housing, which is mostly shelter, or staying on the streets, and the logistics of both are very difficult, and it presents the choice between two undesirable circumstances. Many people choose to stay in shelters, but there's also a large group that sees the qualities you just mentioned as advantages and choose to stay outside.
I mean, it seems the city, and I have to say, you know, we asked a number of representatives from the city to join us, and it's not like they didn't try, but they were unable to provide someone. But I'm thinking about the choice the city faces, which is figuring out how to try to persuade people. And they say their demand is for permanent housing versus forcing people to leave. And it seems like those are two difficult choices as it stands now.
Yeah, correct. And that's an important distinction that, you know, that listeners need to be aware of, is when the city is offering housing, it is largely temporary housing. It is largely, you know, come off the streets. We have a place to stay for you for, you know, in shelters or related facilities. But then after that, when the question becomes what's next, there is very limited permanent housing. And it is the permanent housing, which is what the organizers of the camps are demanding, and which is really kind of the Achilles heel of the city right now, is that they just don't have the supply to be able to, you know, if they were willing to move them, just to, you know, to move them into permanent housing, you know, let alone the thousands of others who are in the shelter system, who are in various waiting lists. And, you know, it's a very kind of short-term acute crisis where the solution is ultimately long-term in terms of providing permanent housing, and that mechanism just isn't there. And that's really what I see is kind of one of the structural factors behind this standoff.
Well, and we heard from Sierra that she's been on a waiting list for something like 8 years, which is, mm-hmm. Which is in many ways untenable. So you've got, 47,000 people in Philadelphia looking for permanent, affordable housing, with accent, I guess, on the affordable. You do have vacant housing. You've got housing that's owned by the Philadelphia Housing Authority. Some of it boarded up. Some of it has been sold. I mean, is there enough affordable housing in the city so that everyone could have a permanent home?
There is not. And again, affordable housing, you're going far beyond homelessness. I mean, the homeless population, the numbers we're talking here at the camp is really kind of, the tip of the proverbial iceberg. And, even if everybody who is homeless was sheltered, there's a lot of people who are paying, more than half of their income just on housing costs alone and who are on the verge of homelessness. And again, who need more affordable housing. So it's part of a much larger question. And it is one that, that there is really not a response on the scale that is needed, and which means that we're likely to have confrontations like this for the foreseeable future in one manifestation or another.
We're almost having a break here, but you're talking about encampments. This is going to be a kind of a permanent part of the landscape in the city.
I mean, it's really already been. I mean, you have the camps up in Kensington, which I looked at a couple of years ago. You have, more recently, there have been camps farther down on the parkway. There's been one at the convention center. There's been one at the airport. All of those have been recently cleared. You have this one now, which is actually at least three camps. And the people, if they are going to be cleared, many of them, it's unclear where they're going to go, and they're going to be likely in some form to regroup. Mm-hmm.
That's Steve Metro, and he joins us. He's a teacher at the University of Delaware. His work focuses on homelessness, and he did do a study, part of a study a couple of years ago about the encampment in Kensington. We are talking about the encampment on the Parkway in Philadelphia. Much more after this very short break. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Time.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
It's here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen, talking about the future of the homeless encampment on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway in Philadelphia, scheduled to be cleared by the city today. The deadline was 9:00 this morning. It has not happened yet. And we're talking with Stephen Metro, again, director of the Center for Community Research and Service and associate professor at the Biden School of Public Policy and Administration. That's at the University of Delaware. His work focuses on homelessness. Steve, let me just read a couple of comments that we've gotten from our listeners. And again, you can join us, send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Kyle asks, what are the top two alternative plans for where to move these individuals? Have nonprofits offered any ideas? You have looked, Steve, at encampments. You looked at the one in Kensington, El Campamento, about using that, I guess, as an example of what can be done, what should be done, what shouldn't be done in terms of moving people out of these encampments and where do they go? Can you speak to that?
Sure. To be 100% accurate, so up in Kensington, there was a series of camps. El Campamento is kind of the first one and really the most notorious one. And that got cleared before I got involved. I was part of a project that looked at the city's efforts to clear the two subsequent camps on Kensington Avenue and under the railway underpass on Emerald Street. And really, again, there's kind of this series of camps. So, the El Campamento camp, which was, large and notorious, that got cleared. And then soon after, you had this other series of camps that popped up in the Kensington area. Of course, Kensington is notorious for drug use, and it's also been increasingly kind of a center of homelessness where you have a lot of people who are living on the streets. The city kind of regrouped after they closed El Campamento, which is basically just a literal clearing of the camp. And they did you know, basically they wanted to do it right in terms of they wanted to clear the subsequent camps and not just scatter the population, but also wanted to provide them with resources, both with housing and with substance abuse services and other behavioral health services. And they looked around the country. They came up with a model that was being used in San Francisco with some success, too, where they provided a notice, a 30-day notice of eviction, and then they basically flooded that area with services, with outreach, mm-hmm. and, you know, offering anyone who's looking to get services, either housing or substance use services, a placement there. That was largely
successful.
Did it work?
I mean, was it successful, I should say?
I mean, we came up, we looked at it closely, we talked to city officials, we talked to homeless, we talked to service providers, we did a lot of observation, and it was largely successful. The city broke through a lot of bureaucratic red tape and was able to get treatment access much quicker than was available before, which, if you know anything about getting people treatment, it's essential that the services are right there. They also opened up a lot of what they call navigation centers, which is temporary housing space, but it's housing that's kind of much more on the terms of the people who are staying there. Just not so many rules, not so much structure. They would accommodate couples, they could accommodate pets and things like that. So that was successful. The camps were cleared, and but also there was no long-term solution. So ultimately, a lot of people left and didn't avail themselves of services, and camps kind of kept popping up. Also, there were, once the short-term treatment was over, once, people looking to move out of the navigation centers to something more permanent, then they would join long waiting lists for, long-term recovery housing or, affordable subsidized housing. And, so there was, while there was a direct path out, it became much harder to get long-term solutions.
The solution, yes, we need intervention and help for these people, but at the same time, if there isn't a long-term solution, you're just kind of, chasing the problem, it seems. Let me read another question from our listener, Ryan. He says, why don't they use all the abandoned houses down at the Navy Yard? There's literally a small community of abandoned houses, just needs a little TLC. And I guess part of the question, Steve, is just, we've got this crying need. So you've got 47,000 people in need of affordable housing. There is vacant housing. There's some housing that's owned by the PHA. So how do you, connect the dots, and how do you connect the person with a house that needs to be livable besides being affordable?
That's at the heart of the platform of the camp organizers and the advocates, is that there's all this housing, and they have even presented a way to connect that housing with the people that are in the camps. The Philadelphia Housing Authority really hasn't come up with a response to that, other than they seem unwilling to open up any further housing or let people who are homeless jump what you pointed out was a years-long waiting list. And so there is, there is an approach in homeless services called Housing First, which has been shown to work better than most approaches, where you can take someone off the streets and, provide them with housing and services if they want and need them, and that people will maintain that housing. And that is, that's regardless of whether people have behavioral health histories, chronic homelessness or things. So there is, what the logistics are and the barriers to putting that housing available. Solutions are seldom that simple, but pointing this out has given the advocates kind of an advantage in the back and forth they've had with the city, also because the city really hasn't come back with an alternative. Mm-hmm. What are they doing, in the big picture to provide any kind of housing, be it that vacant housing or some kind of an alternative?
So, Steve, you're saying that a house is a solution for homelessness?
a house is a solution for homelessness. I mean, it's clear, you know, it may not be the sole solution, and there are, you know, are often other services that are needed, but it is necessary, sometimes sufficient for ending homelessness.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you joined us on Radio Times. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me, Marty.
You're welcome. That's Steve Metro, again, director of the Center for Community Research and Service, associate professor at the Biden School of Public Policy and Administration at the University of Delaware, where his work does focus on homelessness. Joining us now is Alex Stewart, encampment organizer, and he's with the Workers' Revolutionary Collective. Alex Stewart, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Hi, nice to be here.
And also with us is Tara Taylor. She's a resident of the encampment. She's also an organizer as well. And Tara Taylor, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks for having us. Our pronouns are actually they and them.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Thanks for having us. Our pronouns are actually they and them.
They and them. I'm sorry about that. And this is a live moving show and a lot of pieces that didn't fall into place. So thank you very much for joining us on the show. Tara, let me start with you. You are living at the encampment. How long have you lived there?
Since about the second day it was started, so back in June. So we're getting into about our fourth month here.
And what has it been like for you to live there this summer?
Challenging, inspiring. Stressful, fulfilling. It's been a lot of things. The camp moves and grows and evolves quickly, and the city has responded in a lot of different ways, many of which we had foreseen and were prepared to contend with. And it's really just been about trying to stay plugged into the people day in and day out, and those energies change. So it's been a fast-paced environment.
Alex, let me get you in on the conversation. Where do things stand today? We were, our first guest kind of set the stage for us that there is a police presence there, at least there was, you know, at 10 o'clock this morning. Where do things stand right now?
There's still a large police presence. Also, you know, a lot of municipal and SEPTA trucks and buses here. So it shows you that the city has the money and the resources to do action. It's just what type of action they choose to do. So yeah, there's a large police presence here still, and it seems like it's going to be like that for a while.
Are we talking about a standoff as you see it?
We have people here supporting, and we have police who are just standing there, not protecting and not serving anyone. They're, you know, the city decides to use our tax money to pay cops overtime, versus providing the mental health and housing resources that they have available to the people.
Tara, let me go back to you. And we hear that there are a number of demands, but the most important one has to do with permanent housing. Help us understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. What we really need is permanent housing that's community-owned, that's community-managed, that provides low and no-income housing to make sure that everyone in Philadelphia has access to this basic human right that we are due. And not only does that account for being able to take all of the people who have already been abandoned and neglected by the housing system, who have been on waiting lists for decades, who have been experiencing homelessness generationally, who have been living chronically homeless despite all the services that the city claims to have and the city claims to offer and wants to pressure us to rely on. It also provides for all of the people who are currently at risk of losing their own housing, as people face evictions, as people face foreclosures. There isn't a net for them. There isn't a solution for them. There's no plan for them. So permanent housing that starts with low and no income, that's community run, allows us to build up a system where everybody has access to that basic right, and for us to be able to create systems that actually can hold and support that community in all the ways that it needs, rather than continuing to perpetuate these cycles of isolation and insufficient support.
Alex, is it permanent housing for everyone in Philadelphia who needs permanent housing? And as we know, that the list for affordable housing on coming through PHA is something like 47,000 people long. Are you lobbying for all people in Philadelphia or people at the encampment or both?
we want the people who are most oppressed to be uplifted first, of course. But as we continue this fight and as this fight grows, with our actions to shut down, support those who decided to shut down eviction court, we will stand with everyone who faces housing insecurity. And we will stand with the majority of Philadelphians who are paying more than 30% and so well over, a lot of them paying well over 50% of their income to just be sheltered, to just not be on the streets. So this is a fight for structural change. This is a fight that will impact anyone, whether you are currently a renter paying a lot of these overpriced rents, or whether you are unhoused. The fight for permanent low income and no income housing is a structural change to disrupt the market that perpetuates profit in housing and not housing people.
That's Alex Stewart, Tara Taylor, joining us from the Benjamin Franklin encampment. And joining us by telephone is Kelvin Jeremiah. He is CEO of the Philadelphia Housing Authority, just called into Radio Times. And Kelvin Jeremiah, thanks for calling in. And we've been trying to get someone from the PHA to join us on the show today. Do we have him?
Yes, I'm here. Kelvin Jeremiah from PHA.
Okay, very good. You're on the radio. You're on Radio Times. Thanks for joining us. And you're also on the air with Alex Stewart and Tara Taylor. They are at the Benjamin Franklin encampment. You probably know who they are with the negotiations that have been going on. But what is the solution to this impasse to you, Kelvin Jeremiah?
Well, we obviously went to the encampment today with the hope of working with the clergy and the residents of the encampment to find an amicable resolution to this. It's something that Mayor Kinney and I were committed to and have been committed to for the last 2 months. We've been engaged with the encampment leaders. Unfortunately, today they rebuffed our attempts to help the residents of the encampment. And unfortunately, it seems like they're unwilling to have us provide the needed assistance that the encampment residents currently need.
Can I give you, Tara, just a chance to respond to Kelvin?
I mean, what we heard is that you asked for a solution and they offered you assistance and a methodology that wasn't founded in what the people actually asked for, even in accessing the services they proposed. And that's really been the pattern here, is that we are talking about systemic structural solutions to these issues rather than temporary band-aids and insufficient bolstering, but that's continually what we get in response. So I think that actually talking about solutions is really going to be the first step to the city having any interest at all in pretending that they care about exacting one.
Kevin
Jeremiah,
with all,
go ahead.
With all due respect, I think that's utter nonsense, frankly. I think we provided a whole host of solutions. The long-term, there are short-term solutions that we provided. There are long-term solutions that we provided. There are regulatory changes that are required. There are funding changes, solutions that are required from the city, state, and federal governments. And so it seems to me that any one of the solutions that we've put on the table, all of which have been rejected. They've asked for a pathway to permanent housing that was laid on the table. They asked for a moratorium on sales of property that was put on the table. All of the things that they've requested. Now, listen, one of the more absurd demands is that we immediately housed 47,000 people on our waiting list. We all recognize that the city and PHA or the state don't have the resources to build or to have 40,000 units.
Yeah, I have to jump in only because we have to end the show, but we're going to have the three of you together and do some more negotiating on Radio Time. So I thank all three of you for joining us today on the show. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us. And you're listening to Radio Times. You're on WHYY in Philadelphia.